ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। वी रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 69 श्लोक नंबर 9-12 टुडे। विष्टब्धं विद्रुमस्तंभैर् वैदूर्य फलो फलकोत्तमै इंद्रनीलमयै कुड्यैर् जगत्या चाहतत्विषा। विष्टब्धं विद्रुमस्तंभैर् वैदूर्य फलकोत्तमै इंद्रनीलमयै कुड्यैर् जगत्या चाहतत्विषा। विष्टब्धं विद्रुमस्तंभैर् वैदूर्य फलकोत्तमै इंद्रनीलमयै कुड्यैर् जगत्या चाहतत्विषा। माताजीस, विल रीड द नेक्स्ट। Will not read the Sanskrit, will read a translation. We'll see the word-to-word translation for this shloka. Vishtabdham, supported. Vidruma, of coral. Stambhai, by pillars. Vaidurya, of Vaidurya gems. Falaka, with decorative coverings. Uttamai, excellent. Indranilamayai, bedecked with sapphires. Kudyai, with walls. Jagatya, with a floor. Cha, and Ahata, constant. Twisha, whose effulgence. And then there are succeeding shlokas, 10, 11 and 12. But we'll read the combined translation and purport. So translation and purport by the disciples of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Supporting the palace were coral pillars decoratively inlaid with Vaidurya gems. Sapphires bedecked the walls and the floors glowed with perpetual brilliance. In that place, Tvashta had arranged canopies with hanging strands of pearls. There were also seats and beds fashioned of ivory and precious jewels. In attendance were many well-dressed maid servants bearing lockets on their necks and also armor-clad guards with turbans, fine uniforms and jeweled earrings. The glow of numerous jewel-studded lamps dispelled all darkness in the palace. "My dear king, on the ornate ridges of the roof danced loudly crying peacocks, who saw the fragrant aguru incense escaping through the holes of the latticed windows and mistook it for a cloud." Purport. Srila Prabhupada writes, probably this is from the Krishna book. Srila Prabhupada writes, "There was so much incense and fragrant gum burning that the scented fumes were coming out of the windows. The peacocks became illusioned by the fumes, mistaking them for clouds, and began dancing jubilantly. There were many maid servants, all of whom were decorated with gold necklaces, bangles, and beautiful saris. There were also many male servants who were nicely decorated in cloaks and turbans and jeweled earrings. Beautiful as they were, the servants were all engaged in different household duties." Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupaha Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyayevacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Namaom Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Nitinamine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna. So I seek the blessings of all the assembled devotees so that we can speak properly on this most exalted topic concerning the personal activities of the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna. So this present narration is being spoken by Srila Shukdeva Goswami to King Parikshit. And this is a very interesting combination how Shukdeva Goswami is a supreme renounced saint who refused to come to the material world from the womb of his mother for the long period of 16 years because he thought it was too entangling. He was already free from the modes. So he is the supremely renounced saint And the contrast is that the listener is Parikshit Maharaj, who is the emperor of the whole world. So, this is the setting of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in this contrasting setting, we are seeing how Shukdeva Goswami, it is described at the end of the first canto that when he would wander from home to home, he would barely stop at some place for more than 5 minutes. It is mentioned, he would stop for the time which is required for milking a cow. Go dohanam kvachit. And here we see for the last 2-3 chapters, he is describing about Samba. Samba is the son of Lord Krishna. His marriage. Now in this chapter he is talking of Krishna's married life. So usually somebody who is supremely renounced would not be interested so much in meditating, speaking on the activities of some married householder in such great detail. There is no connection for him. But here we see Shukdeva Goswami is describing that. Narad Muni also in this narration, it is described how he became interested. The first one or two shlokas described how Narad Muni at one time became interested to understand the family life and the activities of Lord Krishna. And that's why he is visiting Dwarka from one palace to another palace. So Narad Muni himself is also an eternal brahmachari, eternally renounced person. He does not have any possessions. The only possession that he had is that Veena. But that Veena or that simple instrument that he has, that also was not a complete instrument. He just found a dry pumpkin in one place. He found a stick somewhere. He found a wire or a string somewhere. And he just put it all together and started playing the Veena. So he is also a Kinchan. But he is also getting interested in the beautiful palaces of Lord Krishna. So why would some renounced people like Narad Muni, Shukdeva Goswami become interested in the splendor of Krishna's palaces? And here we are seeing shloka after shloka, they are describing the beautiful opulent structures that are there in Dwarka. It means there is something deeper happening here. They know Krishna's identity. Shukdeva Goswami knows Krishna's identity. Narad Muni knows Krishna's identity. So they know that how Krishna is not at all touched by anything material. And yet, he is marrying 16,108 princesses and living as if he is an ordinary householder. So he is detached, but how come he is playing the part of an attached person? That is what is interesting for them. And that's why they are checking it out. We were talking to one student recently and he was saying how just recently was Teacher's Day, 5th of September, so we were just talking. And he was remembering about one teacher in his college days who was a very knowledgeable person, but he had retired. And even after getting retired, which happens at quite an elderly age, it also means that he is not earning any money any longer. But he was just seeing that in that college at one particular time, two professors, they left the college abruptly. So there was some kind of a void in that college. And when this news reached that retired professor, on his own, without any request from the college, just out of concern for the students, he came back and offered his services without any remuneration, without any attachment, without any recognition. He said, I just can't see the students not having any professor. So at that old age, when he should be taking rest and he should be just probably taking care of his grandchildren, but he would spend long hours in the college teaching, just because he wants to. So, we are definitely attracted to people who do things quite nicely. So there are people who are supposed to do certain things, but they don't do it nicely. And then there are people who are supposed to do things and they do it nicely. So the second category is always very attractive. But beyond these two categories is the third category, where somebody is not supposed to do something, yet he will do it, and also he'll put his whole heart into it. So Shri Krishna, he is not at all attracted by anything material. There is no need for him to do all these things. But why is he doing it? He is doing it out of compassion for the primary situation of most human beings on this planet. For most human beings on this planet, in human society, they would get married. They would want to live a proper life. Obviously, following all the scriptural rules, we are talking of civilized life. So how do we do it? So if Krishna would not display an example, if Lord Ramchandra would not display an example, we would be at a loss to understand how to lead proper, responsible, grihastha life. And that is what is very interesting, that is what is very attractive to supremely renounced people like Shukdev Goswami and Narad Muni. So here we see in the present chapter how Lord Krishna is engaged in so many activities. And some of these activities, like in one palace, his bidding farewell to his daughters and sons who are getting married. So they are going away. So he's seeing them off. In another palace, they are returning from their in-laws' place. So he's welcoming them. And then there's a whole list of activities. So it almost looks completely human. And human in the sense, it looks very ordinary. This is a sight in so many households. Daughters getting married, daughters already got married, returning home. He is doing his daily duties. So in some places he is playing some dice game with his wives and things like that. So this is almost human and it almost looks ordinary. But there are so many activities that Krishna has done in his life which are also surely non-human. Or in our terminology, they are not ordinary, they are extraordinary. So if you observe Krishna Leela is a wonderful combination of ordinary and extraordinary. What makes me say that? I'll give you some examples. Just the simple incident of Krishna appearing on this planet. So how do ordinary children take birth? There's pregnancy. But Krishna, the pregnancy of Krishna did not happen in that way. From Vasudev's heart, Krishna was transferred into Devaki's womb. And then a small child is born. So that is also how usually childbirth takes place. Krishna could have just, if Shukdev Goswami can appear from the womb directly when he is 16 years old, then Krishna, who is eternally 16 years old in the spiritual world, could have also appeared as a 16-year-old boy. Nothing is impossible for Krishna. But just to make it look very ordinary and make it look very normal, the eternally 16-year-old Krishna in the spiritual world becomes a small child and just appears from Devaki's womb. But how does he appear? He does not appear in the normal way, giving labor pains to his mother. He just appears. He's inside the womb and then he's in front of Devaki. So it is ordinary that usually all children take a small shape and then that's how they are born. But it is simultaneously extraordinary because there are no labor pains. Devaki is smiling and so is Krishna. It's extraordinary. Usually when children are born, they have some kind of a fluid all over their body. They don't have hair. They don't look very beautiful when they take birth. They definitely do not have any ornaments decorating them. But Krishna had beautiful blackish curly hair which was shining. He had nice earrings that were rocking. There was a beautiful smile on Krishna's face. So this is ordinary. At the same time, it is extraordinary. Damodar Leela, so a child playing pranks, very ordinary. That's what we see in every home. Sometimes I'm traveling and I see how there are kids. They just like to, you know, in a train there are these three beds and there is a small ladder. So I've seen so many children, they just come, they'll climb up, climb down. They just want to play some prank and their mother is getting worried whether he'll fall down and probably something will happen. But this is normal. So Krishna is also playing pranks. And then another ordinary thing happens that is very predictable. That then Mother Yashoda thinks, now I'm going to bind him. So she's running after him. But then something very extraordinary happens. What is that? She tries to put that rope, but is not able to put that rope. And she's trying so long, kilometers of rope. But still, it does not get bound. And then afterwards, he gets bound. And then he sees the two trees, Yamalarjun trees. And then he goes through the trees. And then when he goes through the trees, He is himself bound, but he sets free somebody who's in that tree body for 100 celestial years. Nalkuvar and Manigriu were cursed to be there for 100 celestial years. So that comes to something like 36,500 years from earthly calculations. So they have been bound in that form for 36,500 years. And Krishna sets them free. But as he sets them free, he himself is bound. So a lot of things happening. A friend giving advice to another friend. Very common. Somebody is confused, so you call up a friend. Can you please help me? So Arjun is confused and Arjun is asking some help from Krishna. Ordinary. But during that help, to not just give help at the same level, but to elevate Arjun's consciousness to the highest level. That is something extraordinary. When giving that advice to Arjun about what should be done, what should not be done, to show the Virat Roop, to show the universal form, that no friend can do. That is extraordinary. So there are many instances like that. When eating mud, ordinary. So many times kids do that. But showing the universe inside, that is extraordinary. So Krishna Leela is quite a wonderful combination of ordinary and extraordinary. If somebody is looking for something extraordinary, divinity should be extraordinary, God should be extraordinary. There is enough divinity, there is enough extraordinary events happening in Krishna Leela. So if somebody is saying, I want something special to happen, Krishna Leela has enough of that. You read Krishna Leela and you will get convinced, Krishna is somebody divine, Krishna is somebody special. But then there are people who do not wish to find something extraordinary. They say, I have gone through millions of lifetimes of worshipping God. Now I do not wish to worship God. I want to love God. I want to embrace God. So does Krishna work out as a suitable candidate for that? Yes. As we mentioned, ordinary, extraordinary. So somebody who seeks extraordinariness in Krishna's life, he gets enough extraordinariness. And somebody who seeks ordinariness in Krishna's life to love him, there is enough extraordinariness. So this is Krishna Leela, how there is, for those who seek divinity, Krishna gives enough divinity. For those who seek ordinariness, Krishna gives enough ordinariness. That's why Krishna is Sarva Akarshayati Iti Krishna. He is a supreme magnet. He attracts iron, he attracts copper, he attracts whatever metal you are. He is attracting every person. He is attracting those in the Dasya Ras. He attracts those in the Shantaras. He attracts those in Madhurya, Vatsalya, Sakhya. Lord Narayan attracts those who are in Shanta and Dasya. Madhurya, Vatsalya and Sakhya, sorry, he is not able to give that. Lord Ramchandra also, he gives till Vatsalya. But not Madhurya. Madhurya is only for one person. That is his eternal consort, Sita Devi. But Krishna opens all bounds. That's why Sarva. Sarva Akarshati. There is no metal which can escape this supreme magnet. So we thought of comparing this to a example. We heard from one devotee how when he prepares sweets, so he was preparing a sweet called Malpua. So when you prepare Malpua, he was saying how in that dough by which you make Malpua, he was saying he puts little black pepper balls. So black pepper is, you know, it's pungent to the tongue. The taste is little bitter. It's not exactly sweet. So why would somebody put black pepper in a sweet? I was surprised, so I asked him. Then he said, actually, it's a sweet dish, but some taste that you get continuously, then your tongue gets used to it. So when you eat a Malpua, if there are some black pepper balls there, then the taste changes. In Maharashtra, something which is made at every festival is Basundi. So Basundi is milk, you boil it and then you serve it. So it has lot kesar and all those dry fruits. But a very important part of Basundi in Maharashtra, it is called Charoli. I do not know what it refers to in English. But a Charoli also, when you eat, it is not sweet. It is something like black pepper. So you eat it, you get that other taste, then when you drink that Basundi, it becomes nice. Yeah? Or sometimes Shrikhand also, it has little spices. Do you remember what it's called? They grate it. What is that? No. There is this, I just forgot it. There is a something like this, and then you grate it and put it. It has that, you know, jayfar, yeah. In Marathi they call it jayfar. So actually if you eat that jayfar, it has a very contradictory taste. But when you put it in basundi, when you put it in sweet, our shrikhand, it adds to that taste. So why does Krishna do this ordinariness and extraordinariness? He does it because he wants to always increase the attractiveness of his own self. Also we can see how in the first 11 years of his life, Krishna was in Vrindavan and he was reciprocating with his Vrajvasi devotees. So who are his Vrajvasi devotees? Vrajvasi devotees are those who love him unconditionally. They do not have any other activity. I was discussing somewhere how we look forward to come to the stage of Man Mana Bhav Mad Bhakta. We look forward one day, we pray that one day we reach the stage of Sarva Dharman Parityaj. For them, it's a description of their daily activities. If you want to understand what is Man Mana Bhav Mad Bhakta, just read about the daily activities of the Vrajvasis. If you want to read about Sarva Dharman Parityaj, just read about a typical day in a Vrajvasi's life. So they are at that level where we aspire to reach one fine day. And yet after 11 years of his stay there, Krishna somehow left them. So why did he leave? So just to give it another perspective, we can say how the first 11 years of Krishna's life were based on the concept of desire. He desired to reciprocate with his devotees. And these devotees had given up everything for Krishna. And Krishna says, I reciprocate. So he wanted to reciprocate. But beyond the reciprocation between his pure devotees and himself, there is also another concept which we can call as duty. What is that? Duty towards all the other so many living entities who are not so surrendered to Krishna, yet Krishna has some duty towards them, because Krishna had promised Bhumi Devi, Lord Brahma, that I will soon come and reduce the burden. So the first 11 years of life of Krishna are based on the concept of desire, and the rest, you could say 114, 113, are based on the concept of duty. So Krishna is also teaching us how both are important, desire and duty both. Generally when we get too much into satisfying our desires, we become very self-centered. Also many times we can become irresponsible. We just neglect all our duties. All that matters is what I feel is right, what I want to do. Sometimes you become very narrow-minded. My views are the right views. Or sometimes you can also become very exploitative. Come what may, I will do what I want, even at the cost of others' welfare. What happens to some people who are just duty-centered? Alright, so you know, desire-centered life is not very good. What about those who are duty-centered? So somebody who is very much just focused on the aspect of duty, we can see how this person can become very idealistic. He's always talking of ideals. He can also become very non-reciprocative, because it does not matter what you feel for him. Finally, it's all about duty. That is what counts. He can also become hard-hearted, because he never takes time out from his duties to reciprocate with those who care for him. So there are always these two extremes. People who are too much, they live their lives based on the concept of desire, bhog. And then there are those people who lead their lives based on kartavya, so duty. And both are individually good. But Krishna is teaching us, it's not that we should do just one, we have to achieve a balance of both. So, some example that comes to my mind of somebody who had both. He had some desires, just like we are talking about Krishna. He had desires and he had duties, but he did both. Sugriva is somebody who had desires. He wanted his wife back. That's why he made a pact with Lord Ram. But he had a duty to fulfill that pact. He had a duty that when Lord Ramchandra gave him his position, he returned to him his wife. He had a duty towards Lord Ramchandra to assist him in getting his wife back. But we can say how Sugriv at one point of time neglected his duty and got caught up in his desires. So not a very favorable example. Of course, Lord Lakshman, he reminded him and then he again came back to his senses. Another example of somebody who had both. He had a desire and he had duty, but he tended more towards duty, is Bhishma. Bhishma had a desire to worship Krishna. He expresses his desire in the Bhagavatam, first canto. But could he lead a life based on that desire? Could he side with Dharma? Could he ever openly declare his love, affection for Krishna? Never. He could not do that. So he is a person whom we could say neglected his desires and went too much towards the duty side. So what is the result? The result is he got exploited. Anytime he would object to Duryodhan's plans, anytime he would side with sense, not with the Pandavas or with the Kauravas, what is right? Anytime he did that, Duryodhan would remind him, excuse me, do you remember? You have vowed to be always on the side of the throne of Hastinapur, and today I happen to be there. My father happens to be there. So just keep quiet. And he had to do it because he had that inclination to be strongly on the side of Kartavya or duty. But one example that comes to our mind is somebody who had a desire and also did very good on the duty part. There are two examples. There are many good devotees who could come in this definition. One example that comes to our mind is Lord Lakshman. Lakshman also got married in the same mandap as Lord Ramchandra. He is also newly married to his wife, but he leaves Urmila because he wants to serve Lord Ramchandra. Sita Devi also has a kartavya for her husband, but she also has a desire to serve her husband. So we could say that for those devotees who are really pure, their desire and duty become one. Generally, when we talk of desire, as in the case of Sugriv, their desire was for self-enjoyment and their duty was to serve Lord Ram. That's where the conflict comes. But somebody, if he or she can train himself, if we can train ourselves to make our desires one with our duties. So supreme duty is to serve the Supreme Lord, to serve his representatives. Unfortunately, in the conditioned stage, our desire diverts from this duty. But for Sita Devi, her desire and her duty is one. She actually loves Lord Ram. She wants to serve Lord Ram. It is mentioned how in the journey through the forest, one time Lord Ramchandra was walking ahead, as normally husbands do. And some thorns got stuck in his feet. Excuse me. Some thorns got stuck in his feet. And Sita Devi could not bear that. And she could see that he's just continuing on with those thorns in his feet. So when she asked him, why wouldn't you remove those thorns? So Lord Ramchandra replied, if somebody takes my shelter, I never discard that thing. So understanding this mood of Lord Ramchandra, then Sita Devi did the unthinkable. What is that? The supreme emblem of chastity came and started walking ahead of Lord Ramchandra. Why would she do that? She would do that because as she would walk, then all the thorns and all the sharp pebbles would then prick her feet. And then Lord Ramchandra would not get any more thorns. So this is her desire to serve Lord. But also it is one with the kartavya, that in the role of a wife, her kartavya is also to serve Lord Ram because he happens to be her husband, eternal husband. So this is something very interesting about Krishna Leela, that the balance of desire and duty. So when we are only desire focused, we saw what are the ill effects. When we are only duty focused, we saw what are the ill effects. But if we balance both, then there are some good things. We are broad-minded because we are focused on the duty aspect. But within that we are focused because we balance both. We are responsible, but we are also soft-hearted. Generally when we become responsible, we might become hard-hearted. We are very practical, but we are non-exploitative. In the name of practicality, sometimes we exploit. And we are very helpful, but we are also very careful. In being helpful, sometimes we help so much that we do harm to ourselves. So we have to be helpful, at the same time be careful that we do not end up neglecting our own growth, our own progress. So it's a challenge, and when we learn from Krishna Lila, this is something that we can look forward to. How to make our desires and our duty one. In one of the songs by Narottam Das Thakur, he is saying, Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chittete Koriya Aikya. So Guru Mukha Padma Vakya is the duty, but Chittete Koriya Aikya one is the desire. So something like that. This city is made by Vishwakarma, and there's another city that is made by Vishwakarma. It is called Lanka. So there's a small description, that there's a long verse after verse glorification or speaking of the opulence and the pleasures that were there in Lanka when Hanuman visited it. But just to put it in short, because we also saw some of the descriptions of the opulences of Dwarka some days back. So when Hanuman comes there and he reaches Lanka, he can breathe wonderful fragrance of flowers wafting in the breeze. He can just smell it. It's very beautiful fragrance. He sees that there are big gardens and meadows, grassy meadows. There are ponds, cranes, swans, beautiful lotuses blooming there. The opulence is such that the city is on the top of this Trikuta mountain, three peaks. And there is a golden wall surrounding Lanka. So he's thinking, this is natural. At the same time, this is opulent in terms of gold and all that also. When he goes inside, he's just visiting the outer areas of Lanka, and he sees how from every house comes the sound of laughter. Everyone is happy. He can also hear the tinkling sound of various ornaments and jewelry. So everyone is fully laden with jewelry. In the today's shloka, we saw how through the lattice windows of Dwarka, there was some aguru fumes coming out. So in Lanka also, he sees beautiful, beautiful lattice windows. And he sees there are engravings of gold, of sometimes thunderbolts, or sometimes some planets. So as he's doing all this, his aim is to find out Sita, and then he's going deeper and deeper. So in the center is the inner apartments of Ravan. So he enters there. First he comes across the Pushpak Viman. So it is described how it's almost like an entire mansion. And it is described how it's floating. There's a thread or something and it's hanging in the air. And there are beautiful seats inside. And there are beautiful elephants and horses made up of solid gold which are just kept there to decorate the Pushpak Viman. There's unlimited opulence there. Still, when he enters inside, there are these private chambers where there are many women. And there's a description of how they were not dressed properly. There were many vessels which were full of meat. There were many vessels that were full of wine, liquor. So at one place, it is described how Hanuman, for a moment, thought, if the question is of sense gratification, all the five senses can experience fulfillment in this palace of Ravan. Then he sees Ravan himself. He's intoxicated, he's sleeping. But behind all this is his evil mentality that he wants to kidnap all the beautiful girls from all over the universe and try to enjoy them. So as a devotee, this is definitely reprehensible. We don't want to do this. There is so much opulence, but the foundation of all it is exploitation. So we don't want to do that. So with this background, when we reach Dwarka and when we read about Dwarka, there can be some thought coming in the mind of a sadhaka devotee. I definitely do not want the opulence of Lanka, which is based on exploitation, which is based on stealing from Kuber. But this Dwarka seems very nice. This Dwarka is an opulent city, very rich, everything is very nice, and also it is made up of devotees. How I wish I would lead a life of opulence in the material world. And after this material life, when I go to the spiritual world, anyways, I go back to the spiritual world because I'm a devotee. So this is a nice proposal. Lanka is not a nice proposal. It is made up of demons, those who hate God. But Dwarka is a nice city. Dwarka is a city made up of devotees. Dwarka is a place full of nice enjoyment. Everything is very nice there. So how would a sadhaka devotee face this temptation of not getting attracted to the opulence of Dwarka, but getting attracted to the mood of Dwarka? What is the mood of Dwarka? The mood of Dwarka is, when Krishna returns, the women of Dwarka feel this is the real festival. When Krishna, we can see the sight of Krishna, this is the real festival. When they go and greet Krishna, they say, "Oh Krishna, you are our mother, you are our father, you are our well-wisher, you are our protector, you are our guru, and also you are our supremely worshipable deity." In fact, in other words, they are saying you are all in all. There is nothing beyond Krishna, sarvasva. When Krishna returns, they say, when you left Dwarka, it was as if we lost our vision. We had our eyes, but just like on a dark Amavasya night, even if we have the most potent eyes, without external lighting, we can't make out objects, we can't see anybody. So they say, we had our eyes, but when you were not in Dwarka, it was as if the sun was not there. So nothing made sense to us. But now that you have come, we really are happy. This is the beauty of Dwarka, actually. But since we are a sadhaka devotee, we are practicing devotees, we have many lingering desires, I just thought that this thought could come in our minds. This is a nice place to be. Vrindavan is a place where there are forests, there are cows. Krishna does not even wear shoes. So if I go there, probably I may not be able to wear shoes. And all those thorns and pebbles. And when we go for the yatra, sometimes in the afternoon sun, when we are walking on sand, the sand scorches. It's hot. One yatra we were doing Govardhan Parikrama, and one of my friends, he has soft feet. He has never been bare feet. So he was doing Govardhan Parikrama and he started off without shoes, but it was just too difficult for him. So he was wearing shoes and he was doing Govardhan Parikrama. So some of the local villagers, they started shouting. Near Govindkund, some of the ladies, they said, you know, in their own way, in their own language, they said, you know, what is he doing? What are you doing? Don't you know how to do Govardhan Parikrama? You cannot wear shoes. So sometimes in a comfortable setting of Bombay or wherever we are doing our sadhana, our Govardhan and Vrindavan is very attractive. It's a life of simplicity and all that, yes. But just 2 or 3 days in the cold weather of Kartik Vrindavan, and I know devotees, you know, their bones get cold. They have to wear socks and sweaters and all that, yes. So in such a setting, when we read about the opulence of Dwarka, everything is very comfortable here. So we could get attracted to a place which is materially very opulent. It is very comfortable, full of facilities. At the same time, it offers us a nice atmosphere for devotion to God. And we could aspire or hanker for this place. But what is the real opulence of Dwarka? The real opulence of Dwarka is not all these physical facilities. At one point of time, this Dwarka, which is full of facilities, Krishna allowed it to get submerged into the ocean. So all those facilities are no longer there. If somebody wants to spend a comfortable devotional life in the material world and then go back to the spiritual world. But Krishna showed the temporariness of the opulence by submerging that Dwarka. When we read the story of Nalkuver and Manigreev, we read how Nalkuver and Manigreev, they are such elevated personalities. They are the sons of Kuver. Kuver is such a nice person. He is a devotee of Lord Shiva. He is the treasurer of demigods, means he is a very trustworthy person. He would not misspend a penny from the treasure. Yet what do the sons of Kuver do? They have a high birth, Janma, they have Aishwarya, they have Shruta, and they have Shri also. So the 4 obstacles for devotional service, even if one obstacle somebody has, in this world somebody is very intelligent, that's an obstacle to surrender to Krishna. Somebody is very beautiful, that's an obstacle to surrender to Krishna. Somebody comes from a high family, that's an obstacle to surrender to Krishna. And Nalkuver and Manigreev had all 4 in abundance simultaneously. What would one expect? So they go to Mandakini Ganga, which is a place for purification. The garden is a personal garden liked by Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is a Vaishnava. So obviously he engages in devotional service activities there. But what do these two young boys do? They engage in harmful sense gratification. So Dwarka, somebody in a very mature way could say, this is sense gratification, this enjoyment, but this is not contradictory to devotional service. But what do these two do? They do sense gratification that is contradictory to devotional service. So in the shloka where Narad Muni comes and Narad Muni sees these two boys and the young girls who are with them, they cover their bodies, but they don't do. The two boys don't do. So it is mentioned, there's a shloka which says something like Madira Mattau Shri Madandhau. So it is mentioned that they were completely intoxicated with liquor, and one feels, oh, because they were intoxicated by liquor, that's why they disrespected Narad Muni. But the shloka says, yes, Madira Mattau. Both of them were intoxicated with liquor. But in the next line it is mentioned, Shri Madandhau. Shri is opulence, Mada is pride, Andhau means they were blind. So they had one level of blindness that comes by just liquor, but they had much deeper blindness that comes by opulence, that comes by pride, especially their connection with Lord Shiva. Because Lord Shiva is such a great personality. Now interesting part is, people in this world, they worship Lord Shiva to get opulence. So Kuver is a big devotee of Lord Shiva. These two young boys, they are intoxicated by their connection to Lord Shiva. And Lord Shiva is the most renounced person. He does not have a place to stay. He does not have proper clothes to wear. We see a picture of Lord Ramchandra, we see a picture of Lord Krishna seated on a throne. And he is dressed nicely, he has garlands and pearls and gold jewelry. Somehow we never see a picture of Lord Shiva decorated nicely. Lord Shiva is just wearing a deer skin and is sitting on some mountain. He does not even have a proper seat. So the whole world goes to Lord Shiva because he is the controller of the material world in association with Durga Devi. They are the persons who control the material world, the three modes. And everyone goes to Lord Shiva asking for opulence. But they never look at Lord Shiva. They always offer prayers to Lord Shiva. Please give us opulence. Please give us this. Please give us that. You both are in control of the material world. But they never look at Lord Shiva. How is Lord Shiva? Lord Shiva is the controller of all the opulence and riches, yet he himself never partakes of it. He's a supremely renounced person, so he's giving a strong message to his followers. They may be Kuber, they may be Nal Kuber, they may be Manigriv. He's saying, once in a while, just do not offer prayers to me, once in a while, at least look at me. Yes. I'm an Acharya, I'm not just telling you by my words, I'm teaching by my actions myself. Look at my lifestyle. We do not have a home. Why? I'm telling you, all the things that you're asking from me, they can cause you to fall down from the supreme goal of life, that is spiritual advancement. So that's why as a sadhaka devotee, although we are very attracted to these descriptions of Vrindavan, but we know how it is very difficult for us. The simplicity of Vrindavan is very complex for us. So then when we read this Dwarka, then we say, this is a nice place. I also want to be somewhere in one palace with nice, I can be a guard for Krishna wearing a beautiful turban and wonderful jewelry. Yes, it's described how the guards and the maids of Dwarka were also very well dressed. This is something very nice. Devotion also to Krishna also, service also, at the same time, good, comfortable life. The danger is, anytime anybody gets opulent in this material world, there is a danger of falling prey to it. And Nal Kuver and Manigriv fell prey to it. And Lord Shiva is telling us, even though you are a devotee of Krishna, and even though Krishna is beyond the modes, and it sounds very attractive to serve Krishna in opulence, we have to be very, very careful that we never get enticed by the enjoyments of this world. The real enjoyment is how much we are attracted to Krishna. So there is attachment to the material world, then there is detachment to the material world, but beyond that is the attachment to the spiritual world. So that is actually the real opulence of Dwarkavasis. Dwarkavasis feel even Dwarka to be vacant without Krishna. And they offer prayers to Krishna. Krishna, please do not leave us. We see how sometimes to wage a war and to participate in establishing dharma, you sometimes have to leave Dwarka. Please do not leave us. But sometimes because of our contaminated vision, material opulence of Dwarka, the subsidiary opulence of Dwarka is the material opulence. We could get enticed by it and we could get attracted to it. Also today is Lord Vaman Dwadashi. We have 2 minutes. So just wanted to speak how even this pastime of Lord Vaman coming and snatching away by cheating from Bali Maharaj is also giving us the same lesson. So if we see in a very short way, when Lord Vamandev comes to Bali Maharaj, then Bali Maharaj is just so happy to see a very effulgent looking Brahman come there. And he brags to him. He says, what do you want? What do you want? Just take it. He offers an open offer. He's giving something like a blank check to Lord Vamandev, Bali Maharaj. And then Bali Maharaj, instead of directly asking him something, actually glorifies Bali by reminding of his family lineage. So if you read, then he says, oh yes, yes, Bali, I know about you. I know about your whole family dynasty. You are the son of Virochan. Virochan gave up his family duration to the demigods. Your grandfather Prahlad is such a great devotee. He never gave up devotional service to Vishnu. So in your whole lineage, he's glorifying Bali Maharaj. That there is nobody who did not satisfy somebody who came for charity. So my understanding of it is, I have not heard it, that in order to curb the bragging tendency of Bali, because Bali was also kind of proud of his opulence, he was saying, here am I sitting in front of you and I have dominated even the most opulent, powerful demigods. And now all the wealth of the universe is with me. And now you have come to me. So in order to curb again this Shri Madandhav, there was a chance that he also would be blinded by Shri opulence. So then Bali Maharaj Vamandev tells him, you know what is your real opulence? Your real opulence is not the fact that you are sitting on the universal throne. Your real opulence is your connection with your ancestral devotees. Your connection with Virochan, your connection with Prahlad. That is your real opulence. Did you forget that? Because this opulence of sitting on a throne can make you blind. But when you think about your connection with great devotees, that connection, that opulence opens your eyes to the reality of this world. So he reminds Bali of his real opulence, his connection with his father and grandfather. And then, as the sequence of events goes, Bali tells him, all right, so what would you like? And then Vamandev says, I want 3 steps of land. So again, because there is that conditioning, anybody in the material world is conditioned. So then again there is conditioning and he says, you are a short boy, your height is not much, but it seems just like your height is not much, your intelligence is also not much. You are a person of less intelligence. Again, you know, there is that small remark at Vamandev, almost like insulting him. Don't you understand who I am? I can give you anything. So again there is an insult. But again Lord Vamandev reminds him the virtue of satisfaction. That no, we should be satisfied. We should not be attracted by opulence of this world. The real opulence is satisfaction. The real opulence is your connection with great devotees. And then as Bali Maharaj is ready to grant him, all right, if that's what you want, take these 3 steps of land. Again, Shukracharya comes in between and says, he is trying to fool you. Please do not get fooled. This is the turning point. Till now, Bali Maharaj was kind of happy and he was proud of his possessions. But this is the time when the real opulence of his surrender, of his bhakti comes out. What is that? When Shukracharya tells him, he gives him technicalities. He tells him in certain conditions, if you have not uttered the word Om, your promise can be changed. He quotes one book, Bhavraj Shriti, and he says, from this book it is mentioned, under certain conditions, if you give a promise, you can take it back. And then he again gives some conditions, in a war or in a marriage, there are certain conditions in which you can lie, it's okay. So he gives all these technical details. and the situations in which you can lie. But Bali Maharaj just goes beyond all that and says, no, once I have promised, even if he's Vishnu, and I know that he's going to cheat me, but this is my moment, this is my moment of glory. This is what I had been waiting for. This is my opulence that is coming to me now. I want to show a happy face to Prahlad. When my grandfather sees me, I want to show him I am happy to surrender to Krishna. And he surrenders. And then we know how Vamandev takes away the whole property in two steps. And then Bali Maharaj offers his head, his own life as a third step. And again this same lesson comes up, that opulence, if you become possessive about it, it can actually cause a fall down. But opulence, when it is used to serve Krishna, it can become the real opulence, the original opulence. That is, to use it to serve Krishna and his devotees. So, we'll stop here. And we are very grateful to all of you for your patient listening. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavat Mahapurana ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Anantakoti Vaishnavrinda ki jai.